Good afternoon. This is Paul Kelly. I'm your host on today's Speak Up Arkansas show. You're listening to KABF 88.3, the voice of the people. Today, we are going to be talking about an issue that has been a part of our community and remains. I can remember years ago when I worked at the prosecuting attorney's office, we started getting cases of women who were facing issues of domestic violence coming into our offices. And domestic violence in Arkansas is probably more prevalent than most people realize. There are many factors contributing to this reality, some of which are related to the embarrassment that victims feel, fear of retribution or additional abuse or violence resulting from disclosure, and the lack of resources and societal beliefs. Violence against women may occur mostly behind closed doors, but it doesn't mean the problem is any less visible. It pours out into the streets and into future generations. Many researchers have concluded that some children who witness or are victims of domestic violence experience a profound and lasting impact on their lives and hopes for the future. Some kids can grow up believing that violence is normal and that they are to blame for it. Domestic violence also has an enormous economic impact, from increased health care costs to workplace issues such as safety and productivity. It is the third leading cause of homelessness among families. Here in the studio to talk about this issue are folks who encounter this reality on a daily basis. They have agreed to share their knowledge and expertise with us today and to answer any of the questions you might have. And we welcome you to give us a call at 501-433-0088, or you can go online and send an email to speakupar@gmail.com. My guests in the studio today are Lakeisa Henry, who is the Assistant Director of Women and Children First, and Pat Blackstone, a court advocate for Women and Children First. I want to welcome you to the studio and so happy to have you in the room with me.
Thank you, Paul. It's so nice of you to bring this issue to the forefront.
Thank you. Well, Pat, why don't we let you start? You're a court advocate, so I know you're in the courtroom on a regular basis, or if not every day. So talk to us about what you do and maybe your thoughts about this issue in general.
Okay. I am the court advocate for Women and Children First, and my office is actually in the courthouse. I very seldom get to the shelter. When anyone comes in to file for an order of protection, and I am in the office, which is 4 days a week, the county clerks will send them to me to assist with the order of protection petition. And after I do that, I talk to them about safety planning, refer them to resources, refer them to the shelter if they need safety. And then they can call me when they have their court date, and I will accompany them to court. I also help them if they need an attorney. Like this morning, I helped someone about 4:35 o'clock last night. The judges had gone home. You can't get an order of protection without a judge. And I had contacted legal services. And so when I got there this morning, I had been informed by legal services they would take her case. And I went up to her judge, where she was outside waiting, and talked to her at length about what she needed to do. So those are just some of the things that I do. I only work 4 days a week, and I have between 80 to 100 clients a month. That's how prevalent violence is in Pulaski County.
Talk a little bit about the order of protection to those who may not understand what that is and what it does in the cases of this.
Certainly. First of all, an order of protection is a civil suit. It is not, it's like a divorce. You do have to have a relationship. It either has to be an intimate partner, child, parent, someone you've lived with, or they just passed a law a few years ago for an in-laws. Now, the thing about orders of protection, and we at the shelter and many advocates around the state have talked about this, it's a 9-page document and a 9-page step to get 9 steps to get an order of protection. It's very much a barrier for victims to get the protection order because they have to go through all that. Once they do, then it's given for 20 to 30 days, at which time they come back to court and tells the judge why they need a formal, final order of protection, which could be 1 to 2 to 5 to 10 years. And it protects them and their children from the person who's abusing them. And especially if they're going to go through a divorce or separation or need to move to another state, it protects them while they're doing that. There are two things I want to say. First of all, you do not need a police report to file for an order of protection. We are having some law enforcement officers out there telling them to go to the prosecuting attorney's office. They can't go to the prosecuting attorney's office just with a number of the police report. They have to have the police report in hand. So if they go to the prosecuting attorney's office, they spend a lot of time when they could get the order of protection and have that while they're doing everything else. You don't even have to call the police to get an order of protection. If you do, I note that on the petition because I fill everything out except their narrative. But that is one thing we've been trying to get across to victims. You do not need a police report to get an order of protection.
So what door do they walk through to get an order of protection? Who do they go see?
Yeah, they come to the Pulaski County Courthouse, and they go to room 120. Okay. If I am in the building, the clerks will immediately send them to me, and I will walk them through the process.
So we have a statewide audience here, and is this the standard operating procedure at most judicial districts?
Unfortunately, I am the only court advocate in the state that's actually in the courthouse, but the petitions, the steps, everything else are the same. Depending on how big the courthouse is and how many cases they have, they may get to a judge quicker than in Pulaski County.
Okay. In a community where there is not a court advocate, what door, which, who do they talk to in the courthouse then?
They have to talk to the county clerks.
Okay.
And when I was at the coalition, the Arkansas Coalition Against Domestic Violence, we did try to do training with them as well. But it's a good thing to know what your options are. We have all kinds of resources or explanations on our website, womenandchildenfirst.org. Thank you. And Arkansas Legal Services also has information on their website as to how to obtain an order of protection.
Okay. Reminding you, this is a live broadcast. You can call, ask questions, or if you have some experiences or something you want to share about this, you can give us a call at 501-433-0088. Or send us an email at speakupar@gmail.com. Is that all you?
There are two important things I'd like to say. If you have an order of protection and you are on a lease, if you are in state in Section 8 or public housing, you cannot be removed from your apartment because of something the batterer does. And they also have to agree to move you to a safer place if you need it. But you do have to show that you have gotten an order of protection. That's number one. Number two, if it's Arkansas and you cannot be evicted, but if you want to change your locks, you can at your expense. And if you want to break your lease, you can do that depending on how long it is. Uh-huh. The other thing I'd like to say, and this is, and then I'll be quiet. A law was just passed in this last legislative session that allows a person who is on a telephone plan with someone that is abusing them, and say that person, you know, their name is on the plan. If they get an order of protection, they can take that to their carrier and be removed from that plan and given a plan of their own. A lot of times we've had batterers take phones away, but most importantly, they've tracked them through GPS on their phone. And they can go have that removed and have the phone plan put in their names.
Okay. All right. And, you know, do you all have a toll-free number statewide that someone, I mean, I know there's a, I think there's over 30 organizations in the state to actually serve families with this issue. So is there a number, a statewide number they can call?
The statewide emergency hotline number is 1-800-332-4443. The number again is 1-800-332-4443. And that number is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
All right. All right. Pat, that anything else you think? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Lakeisha.
Hi. Thank you and welcome.
Yeah.
Pat shared a lot of information in regards to getting an order protection. And so what I like to share is a little bit more on the shelter side and some of the resources that are offered. But also first want to give a definition of what domestic violence is. It's a pattern of controlling and dangerous behavior that can include physical, psychological, verbal, and sexual abuse, and may be experienced at the victim's home, even in the work, even in public. Domestic violence does not discriminate against gender, race, ethnicity, age, or socioeconomic status. And a lot of times, society portrays the fact that many victims are from low-income, poverty-driven communities, but domestic violence is across the board. Anyone can experience it. So some of the services that the shelter offers is including, first, they can call the hotline. And the hotline, again, is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have trained staff that are available to assist anyone that may be in crisis, anyone that is just needing supportive services, such as understanding where they are in their relationship, or they may be trying to assist a family member or a friend. And with that state number, we get the phone calls from out of state too for victims that may need to relocate from a different state. We provide food, clothing, referrals for medical and mental health services, legal aid that Ms. Pat mentioned a while back. There's also the counseling that is provided. We have a DV support group that's offered on Thursday evenings from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. And if you're a member of the community and you're wanting to participate in that group, you can call the hotline and speak with an advocate, and they'll give you further instructions on how you can participate in that support group. So it's not offered just for those that are in the program. If you're not in the program, you can also call and come and participate in that group. We also have a children's program. When, as you can imagine, as a victim, you're needing to go to these various places, and you may not have a family member or friend that can assist you with childcare. So we have childcare advocates that are available for the victims to go out and be able to apply for a job, get a new ID, go to court, and file that order of protection. Just those day-to-day things that you think of, those are the same things that our victims are able to do because we're able to provide those services. Some of the common things that many victims coming to the shelter are needing are the picture ID, Social Security card, birth certificates. If they're trying to find employment, as you can imagine, they have to have a picture ID and a Social Security card. But they don't even have the birth certificate. So if you don't have the birth certificate or the ID, how can you go into the Social Security office to apply for a Social Security card? So sometimes it's a catch-22 when victims are trying to improve, but sometimes the systems that are laid out there make it difficult for them to move forward. And that's where the advocacy comes in, when we're walking side by side with them to help them with the day-to-day activities. The victims are able to provide their own meals. We have advocates to help them provide the meals. Maybe they're learning how to cook healthy meals. And so that's where the staff comes in and teaches them the very basic life skills that they're needing, because we want them to transition on from coming into the shelter. And even beyond that, they can also become an outreach client or guest, which means after they graduate or they transition, if they want to continue meeting with our advocates, if they want to continue with the support groups that on Thursdays, they can certainly have that resource made available for them.
All right. All right. Well, that sounds like I know there's a lot of services and a crisis in anybody's life, and particularly something like this where you are having to not only deal with the crisis, but kind of do it without being protected and safe. So I believe the shelter, at least it was back in the 80s that it opened, I believe. Wasn't the first one... first one was on...
Well, actually, it was in the 70s.
Okay.
And my first job when I came to Little Rock was volunteer coordinator at what used to be Advocates for Battered Women. But the Fayetteville shelter and the Little Rock shelter opened around the same time. It depends on who you talk to who opened first. But when I first moved to Arkansas, they were the only two in the entire state.
Right, right. Yeah, but I know where the first one was, and it wasn't even called that. It was where it was located, in a former social worker friend who actually passed away donated his house. And the best story I had was, you know, when they were opening this up and nobody was doing it, and they needed to have a phone, and you couldn't open to have a phone operating a business was a whole lot more expensive than having an individual phone. So one of the volunteers went down to the telephone company and said, I want to buy and get a phone from my daughter. And you know, gave the address and did all that. And he said, well, what's her name? She said, Susan B. Anthony. And so the first shelter was listed in the phone book under Susan B. Anthony. So, that was how resourceful, and I think most of the people were living on the food that they got from, commodities, and put it all that together. But it has come, it was the 70s, I forgot how long ago it was. And I think the issue has really gotten a lot more attention, and people certainly understand in that. So, well, we have another guest with us. Would you introduce...
I do, but I also want to go back a little bit, Paul. I want the community to know how appreciative we are. We're a nonprofit, and so anything that comes through the doors of Women and Children First are donated. And so we have a wonderful support group that has been able to provide the basic things such as toiletries, toothbrush, you know, toilet paper, the basic things that you have in your home. Those things are being brought in from the community. And so if you're ever interested in volunteering or just wanting to learn a little bit more about how you can assist the shelter, please feel free to call us at 501-376-3219. And perhaps one of the most rewarding things about being in this field is actually walking through that process with our victims and seeing them become empowered in taking back their life and walking through that journey. And so we have Mary here who would like to share a little bit about her journey.
Hello. Yeah. I am so thankful to even be a member of Women and Children's First. They have inspired me so this time. I've been there 3 times, actually, when my daughter is 3 years old. So I've been going through domestic violence with my abuser for over 10 years. And I went back 2 times. This time, it wasn't no going back because I have that little girl to look after. They have helped me so and growing this time. It's not like a shelter and a regular shelter. It's like women and children first. And the advocates, they really care about your future and they really try to help you. They have helped me so, it is so amazing the things that I have grown to even, this the person that I am. I have grown in this shelter. And I know that I am a survivor. I'm a survivor because I'm not going back to abuse. And I want to encourage anybody that's going through abuse, whether it's your husband, boyfriend, or even your children. Your children sees it all. And we have to look out for our kids. We don't want them to think that it's okay for a mother to cry or get abused and that this is the life that they have to choose. It's not the life, and it's not healthy. And it makes you lose your state of mind and being, and it makes you fall out of love with yourself. But a place like Women and Children First and the advocates, they help you and they show you and guide you. You have to look out for you. You get you together first before you can even love and give to anybody. Make sure that you love yourself enough. So won't nobody be able to abuse you mentally, physically, or emotionally, and put God first. God is amazing, and he is an amazing person in my life. And I tell Miss Lakeith all the time, God is over this building. But regardless of whether your religion, you have to love yourself first. I entered the Women and Children's First the first time I was there. I was a hot mess, wasn't I? I wasn't focused on trying to grow or the assistance that they had to provide. I was focused on working and getting up out of there, trying to find me somewhere else to go. Keep in mind, I didn't get the process to heal. I had to just sit back and look at my life. The second time I come back, because I went back to my abuser, because it's hard. When you're going through an abusive relationship, it's hard to say, why are you doing that, or why are you staying there? But you can't judge a person until you walk in their shoes. But it takes that first step to know that I love me, I'm better. It may take counseling, guidance, prayer to get out of it. And I want to advise every woman, man, boy, girl, color, race, if anybody's abusing you in any kind of way, know that it's not right. You do not have to put up with it, and that it's better down the road. Once you put yourself first and start loving yourself, things will work out, and it's amazing. But this time, Women and Children's First, I come in April. For the first 2 weeks, I was a little embarrassed. I'm like, I'm back here again. Lord, it was just embarrassing to me to even keep on allowing myself to go through that. So I found myself in prayer. I talked to Miss Lakeith. She is an amazing counselor. She really cares. I go to her every morning. I have my daughter give her a big hug. Sometimes she don't want to hug her sometimes because she been through what I've been through, because I allowed her to witness these things and it wasn't right for her. Now I love myself so much. I have so much love for my daughter. I am an amazing mother now. I have grown. I'm 36 years old. And my life has, a new beginning has started in Women and Children's First. They have provided me with clothing. I come there with 2 bags. Now I have so many clothes, a whole wardrobe. My daughter has so many shoes just from being donations. And she has so much stuff, and TV curtains, so much stuff. I didn't think that I was able to like get on housing, or I didn't think that, because I am a felon, and I thought that I wasn't able to use different resources. I don't want to tear up, but these people have showed me that and helped me and deal with me and been patient with me, showed me the roads to take, showed me the places I need to go to, kept me encouraged, told me don't give up. Somebody's here. You have to be here for your daughter. It's okay to cry. It's okay to feel sad. It's okay to just have some alone time. The child care, my daughter, if you have one of those kids that just love their mom and don't want to get away from their mom, I have one of those childs. And when you see my child, you see me. But the child care advocate is so amazing with the children. She is so amazing with the children, and she is so amazing. My daughter loves going in there. They have watched her through me getting jobs, watched me through me handling everything I need to handle out there. It's a 45-day program. So keep in mind that when you enter into there, you have to find it in your heart to pick yourself back up and to know when you leave these doors, you want to be a better person, or you're going to fall, bump your head like I did. It took me 3 times to get it right. But now I know I got it right. And it's so, I'm still on, this week has been amazing. Today, I was like, do you want to do a radio? Yes, I want to do a radio show, because this week I got Section 8 housing. That is so amazing through the housing advocate. And it's been, she said, be patient, Valerie. Be patient, Mary. And your blessings will come. She had worked with me. And I was like, I'm not going to be, am I getting approved? I don't even know. I'm just waiting. Are they going to approve me for Section 8? It's like a 2-year wait. You know, and a lot of people have been waiting just to get that Section 8. I'm one of the ones that, like, really, really just need that help, because my daughter hasn't had a stable home her whole 3 years. She thinks that the shelter, every time we drive by, Mommy, that's my house. It's a little embarrassing that your daughter has to see this, you know, and you want to provide, you're supposed, in life as a woman, you're supposed to take care of your surroundings and your child and be their protector and make sure that, you know, you can provide for it. The housing, I got accepted. I picked up my voucher today. Thank you. I got a job. Didn't think, I've been looking for jobs, doing to my background and felonies. I've been finding them, but it gave me a step back. I didn't give up. Keep going. I didn't give up. This time I have humbled myself to the point where I used to be just this street girl, like in the streets, trying to make fast money and it just come and go. This time I have grown so much. I started work yesterday. I have a 401k. I had to ask one of the advocates to help me fill out this W-4 form, because I haven't done it in so long. And that was so amazing that I've been there since April. And I was like, something needs to change. But as I've been there, when you come into the shelter, it's like you're going to be scared. And I know that everybody's scared, and they're not, probably not a people's person in the environment. You don't know if it's a safe place for your child. But when you come into that door, it's women and children first. The shelter stand behind that name. It is an amazing shelter. Please, if you're going through anything, I advise you to come in and let the staff welcome you. They all, from all of the staff to the call center, to the housing advocates, to the assistant director. I even went to the big office. And it's like when you go to the shelter, they have like different forms. If you need clothing or anything, you have to fill out a form when you first come in. Diapers, pads, soap, all of that. Only thing that you have to bring into the shelter is a phone. And Mrs. Keith said, I don't have a phone. You better go down to that government and get you one of them free phones. So happens they were right down the street, and I got me a free phone due to SNAP. So they will provide everything else.
Right.
If your abuser take everything from you, you have to run out of there naked. Come to Women and Children's first, and they will have your back.
All right. Well, that's quite a testimony to what it's like, that it is struggling. It's hard. It's a struggle. It's not an easy thing, and it's the same thing with addiction. People don't mm-hmm. always go the first time. It takes time, and thank you for being here with us. We're going to take a short break right now, and I want to invite our listeners to call in at 501-433-0088. We'll be right back after a little short break. You're listening to Speak Up Arkansas on KABF 88.3.
This song says, no matter who you are, no matter where you go in your life, at some point you're gonna need somebody to stand by you.
We all need somebody to stand by us and to help us, and we're talking about the help that is available in Arkansas and the needs of people who are victims of domestic violence. You're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. You can call in at 501-433-0088. And for shy persons who don't want to be on the phone, you can email me at speakupar@gmail.com, and we'll take your questions that way. So be a part of the conversation. Ask the questions you might have. Share any experiences or thoughts you have on this. We're here to be the voice of the people, and we've only got four of the people in here, so we could have some more. We'd love to hear from you. Again, 501-433-0088. Again, I have in the room with me LaKeisha Henry, the Assistant Director of Women and Children First, Pat Blackstone, a court advocate from Women and Children First, and a current resident of the shelter at Women and Children First. Pat, let's go back to you. talk a little bit about the kind of the state system that's out there. We, you know, our radio stations goes about 90-mile radius in all directions. So there are listeners, we hope, from all over those areas. Talk a little bit about the state picture.
Okay. I used to be the program coordinator for Arkansas Domestic Violence Coalition and actually traveled the state and certified the shelters that wanted to participate in program standards and receive state money to certify them each year. And there are 32 of those shelters. You can go on the coalition's website to get their hotline numbers, or you can call the statewide number that Lakeith gave, because they will direct them if they're in another part of the state. There are some faith-based shelters like Dorcas House. There, I used to talk about this before. We only have, 35, 38 shelters, and we have 75 counties. So some victims are in rural parts of the state, but the sheriffs in those counties are willing to take them to a shelter if they get a 911 call and someone's in danger. Or if you call a shelter, say if you're in a shelter in Conway and it's too dangerous for them to stay there, they might call a shelter in Fayetteville and arrange for that person to be transported there and help them with the transportation. So there are a lot of networks in Arkansas where there may not be actual shelters. And also, rural women have different needs than those in the urban cities because of transportation and the fact that they're out so far. And there are different safety issues. Like, people don't think about it, but if you're living on a farm, there are a lot of weapons on that farm, from saws to hatchets to guns. And so safety planning for rural women is a little bit different. But there are services for any battered woman or victim, a male victim that needs services. Now, some of the shelters, all of the shelters have to provide services to male victims. They may not house them on their campus, but they have ways of housing them so they're safe. So statewide, there are a lot of resources. You just have to sort of be persistent. But I always tell folks, number one, check your hotline, your statewide hotline, because they have the numbers of all of the shelters in the state, and they can also talk about other resources that may be available to them if they don't need shelter, but they need the other resources.
And that number was 1-800-352, is that right? 352-4443. So that's the statewide hotline number. Again, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. You can call and ask questions or give us your thoughts on all of this at 501-433-0088, or email us at speakupar@gmail.com. What are some of the danger signs? You know, I think I read somewhere that it is most of the victims are between the ages of 20 and 24, and that seems like an awful young age. And also, I think the question would be, if someone, what would be a warning sign for someone if, in fact, before it got to this stage?
Well, I think that being called out your name in speaking negative ways would be the first warning of abuse.
Verbal abuse.
That's the first warning. So when you experience a lot of verbal abuse, it's going to come to physical if that keep occurring. So when somebody is verbal abusing you, that is a sign of the relationship is not going to go to peaches and creamy. So a person has to respect you.
Right.
That's how a relationship works. It works two sides.
Right.
So.
And part of, as what you said, is the reason you you know, that doesn't make you feel empowered. That does not make you feel love yourself if you're even, I mean, all of it not be even being true. It's just being pestered with that all the time.
It's like going through abuse and staying in it for so long. I've been in it for 10 years. And you get, like, overtook of it, and you feel like it's okay, or this person loved me, that's why he's doing this. And a lot of us feel like that. It's not true. If a person love you, they're going to treat you with love. So if a person abuse you, and you don't have to take that. Take control of your life and just get out the situation. But you're going to have to. I know I had to go through the domestic violence meetings, and someone that has been in your shoes and listening to different stories, and you have to get that counseling because you can't, like, a lot of us go to our friends and family members and they judge us. So a lot of people that I have came to know in the shelter are from different, I have met different ladies from different places. Mm-hmm. And it's like the closest person to them had hurt them the most. So they come in there scared and scared to vent and scared to tell you, even scared to do life skills, probably even scared to come out their room. Everything scared them. So the first thing is to just learn how to say, I got out of this situation. Take that time to breathe. Take that time to, if you could have been abused right now, just have your you time, mommy and me time. Get that time in while you're there. And then once you, and talk to the, you have to talk to the advocates. It's not like, they can't babysit you. You have to know that they are here for you. But they're not gonna just come to your door, do you need this or do you need that? You have to take control of your life and go to them, because they are there, their offices are open. They tell you when you do your intake, they tell you everything you need to do. Then we have a 20-day follow-up. Seeing that short time goals, the goals of, like, if you need employment, like Ms. Lakeith was saying, identification, get those things, because a lot of people, as I was one, have came and did not get nothing done in that 45 days, and I'm back to square one. So you will want to take advantage of the services that they have to give you and know that it's going to be okay.
I also want to add, if you're listening and you're trying to determine if you're in an unhealthy relationship, or those of you that may have teenagers and you're trying to understand, you know, if my teenager is experiencing any kind of teen dating violence, if you're moving too quickly in a new relationship, that's a huge red flag. Early on in the relationship, if he's asking you or she's asking you to change the way that you look, if your partner starts to isolate you from close friends and family members, that's another red flag, because once he or she has isolated you, and when you're needing to get help, then there's nobody around. And so keep in mind, if he or she starts to say, well, I don't want you hanging around her, she's always trouble, you know, and you've known that person for 20 years and now you're starting to date this individual and they are saying that your friend is trouble, that's a red flag. You know, don't be afraid to have a conversation, or again, you can call the hotline and speak with an advocate that can assist you in helping to identify if you're headed down into an unhealthy relationship. Also, if they criticize you, you know, and saying, my last girlfriend did this, or my last boyfriend treated me this way, that's a red flag. You know, those are unhealthy behaviors in that relationship that could potentially escalate if you're not able to make the right choices early on in that relationship.
Well, you know, I also know that part of it is they must feel trapped somehow, too. I mean, because if you, the people who put up with that at some level must feel trapped and unable to escape. It may be economic, it may be emotional, it may be having a child that needs to be supported, you know, it, all of those things. And I think that is that's something that will keep you there.
I think that a lot of us stay, even just for the financial, when someone like supporting you and you live off of that, they have like power over your being.
Right.
So
yeah,
I think you should, I can't tell you what you should do, but I just couldn't advise everyone to just get out that situation, and it is, you can find a better you.
Yeah, there's a difference between caring for you and controlling you. That also, I think, is, you know, some people are just very, very controlling. And of course, they probably are not, don't act that way in public.
No, you would think you can look at a person, but don't know what goes on in closed doors. A lot of abuse happens behind closed doors. And a lot of us do not tell our family members because we are scared, because we have already been it to them and went back, and we are scared to what they're going to say. Mm-hmm. And when I advise that the people that are going through abuse, if you have someone in that situation, be mindful of their feelings, because, and don't abuse them when they come to you, because they have already experienced abuse. So be a good person and guide them to get the help. I would say, other than staying with someone else, women and children first, it will help you get on your feet and become, empower yourself. Getting from, they have like transportation, bus tickets, they even will come to you, come with you. If you, they have a advocate, if you speak different languages, you know, she can help you and assist you. I like everybody. When everybody comes in, I'm like, hi, how are you? Just to try to make their day feel better, because I've been that person. But I encourage anybody, even if you're not going through abuse, you have to be mindful of what you say and do and how you treat other people. And try to, you know, love everybody's kindness and just try to grow. We need to embrace each other instead of, it's a lot of balance is going on in our city right now. Right. So,
but everybody needs their cup full so that they can provide for others. And I think that's something I learned being in the helping profession. If you're not, as you're saying, loving yourself and filling yourself with pride, then you don't have anything for somebody like that. So anyway,
I'd also like to say one more thing about the services. Women and Children First does have a Spanish-speaking advocate, but also at the courthouse, we have a county clerk that was hired because she could speak Spanish. So don't let that be a barrier, or any other language. If you come in with a family member, I can help interpret and write as told to the court advocate. But I want everyone to know, I was speaking with someone from India the other day, and the Arkansas law, and I think federal law, requires that if someone comes into court for an order of protection or divorce or something of that nature, the court has to provide a paid interpreter, a court-appointed paid interpreter. So don't let language be a barrier, or if you can't read very well, or if you have a disability, you can always get services at the shelter, and you can always get legal services. Don't use every tool at your discretion to stay safe.
All right, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas, and on KABF, you can be a part of this conversation at 501-433-0088. You know, I've in doing a little research on this, I was really the idea that it's behind closed doors. But if it is not addressed, it comes to the streets, and it comes to the generations that follow. And again, as you said, you had to do this now because you have a child, and that is something. But it's I think it's hard, you know, in America, people usually blame the victim. Oh, good. We got a call here. Hang on just a second. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment. You haven't talked about female, the family unit with the female is the abuser emotionally and physically. And I have seen that in when I was growing up and happened for many, many years. And it was a terrible thing. And of course, I don't think you'll find too many males that are going to seek help in that situation, maybe like it might have been for females many years ago.
Right.
But it does happen, and I'm sure it happens in greater numbers than anybody realizes.
Right.
And it's devastating. Emotionally, too, children and the emotional abuser, physical abuser, emotional abuse is sometimes much, much more frequent than the physical abuse, and that takes its toll also. And I will hang up.
All right. Well, thank you for that comment. I know it was mentioned that the shelters do, in fact, take calls from males. They may not be able to provide him with residential. But, yeah, thanks for your call and any other responses to it.
I see at the courthouse probably a dozen male victims a month. And so there is not a stigma attached if you need an order of protection at the courthouse. And I think Lakeith can speak to the services for the male victims.
Thank you, Ms. Pat. Yes, we receive phone calls from male victims as well. A lot of times there is that stigma from society that portrays that men are supposed to be strong. They should be able to handle what goes on in their household, but they're victims too. And so when they call the hotline, they receive the same services just as any other victim they may call the hotline. We have partnership with other programs, and so they are able to assist us when we have male victims if we don't have the appropriate space to house the male victim. But I have counseled male victims. They attend our support groups. They're able to receive the case management services just as any other victim. So we want our male victims to know that you are supported just as well. As you can imagine, a lot of it goes unreported. But again, that's where whenever we're allowed the opportunity to educate our community by services like being on the radio or going in to speak to churches and different parts of the community, going into the high schools to educate our teachers and our other educators on what domestic violence looks like, because it doesn't just affect just any one person.
Right, right. All right. Well, thanks for the call. Again, you can be a part of the conversation. We have just a few more minutes left. You know, one of the things that kind of always permeates these kinds of discussion, and that is the societal views of things. So talk a little bit about what those are, and or maybe what the myths are or something. So it's sort of a closing help to the listeners perhaps that may not understand completely what is going on.
One thing I want to educate the community is a lot of times the one question that comes up is, why does the victim stay? Mm-hmm. That question is asked so many times. And what I have to say is each time the victim tries to leave, there's an 86% chance that they're going to become a homicide. And so when you're asking that victim, why do you stay? Sometimes it's more safer for the victim to remain where they are because they know how dangerous the perpetrator is. And so that's where that safety planning comes into play. They may not be able to leave at that moment. And so a lot of times they will call the hotline and they'll say, I only have 2 minutes to talk. This is what's going on. What do I need to do? And then they'll hang up. and then they'll call back the next hour. And so that's a chance for the advocate to do some safety planning, such as packing a bag and hiding it, making copies of important documents, such as if he's the financial provider in the household, making copies of his check stub, making copies of his insurance plan, making an extra copy of your keys, you know, getting to know your neighbor and coming up with a safety word with your neighbor. You know, if the neighbor knows that safety word, you yell that safety word, and the neighbor knows exactly what to do. So some of those things that can take place while the victim is trying to decide what he or she needs to do during that time. But keep in mind, when they do decide to leave, they're putting themselves at a greater risk. And so when you're asking that victim that, think about the dangers that associate with that victim when she's trying to leave.
Right. And usually the perpetrator is a very controlling person, that very vigilant too. Right.
I'd like to say that if someone comes and gets an order of protection and then, say, dismisses it or doesn't come, it's because of the things Lakeisha said. Please don't feel bad about having to come back and get another order of protection. You will be fine. Don't worry about someone saying, well, the judge isn't going to give you one, because that is not true.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to close the show. I want to thank Lakeisha Henry and Pat Blackstone with Women and Children First, and we'll call her Mary, who is a resident. It has been a very informative and thoughtful discussion. I want to remind you, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. We're here every Wednesday. Next Wednesday, the folks from Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families will be talking about the Senate health care bill, what it does, what it doesn't do, and what you need to do to intervene to make sure that things are going to turn out better than they appear to be going right now. So, again, I want to thank you and remind you, we are on Facebook at Speak Up Arkansas. You can contact us there. I want to thank you again for listening, not only today, but for any other shows. And also, you send me an email. If there's something you want to discuss on the air, send me an email. I'll talk to you about it. I'm open. It's the voice of the people. It's not my voice. It's yours. Thank you for listening, and goodbye. We'll see you next week.
Hi, this is Alanis Morissette, and you're listening to KABF 88.3 in Little Rock, the voice of the people.
It's time for Radio Cals, a weekly program from the Central Arkansas Library System. Every Wednesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 FM, we will share with you conversations with interesting Arkansans on primary sources, Chewing the Fat with Rex and... It's time for Radio Cals, a weekly program from the Central Arkansas Library System. Every Wednesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 FM, we will share with you conversations with interesting Arkansans on primary sources, Chewing the Fat with Rex and Paul,